Logged On.
Welcome to Logged On, a monthly podcast from Dazed about all things internet culture, from memes to emerging trends, deep web conspiracy theories, and beyond. I'm your host, Gonzalo Yelchinkaya, and today's guest is Anna Victoria Disnick. For those of you who don't know, Anna is a London-based artist and the chief content officer at System Magazine. She's consulted for brands such as Balenciaga and is generally an amazing online presence. So, Anna, welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
No, thank you. So for today's episode, we are going deep into the matrix to explore the topic of clout. So disclaimer, I know clout isn't a new thing. It's probably been around for as long as there's been humans. But for the purpose of this episode, also, I feel like we should kind of define clout as well, maybe as, for me, I think it's exchangeable with social cachet, kind of having a personal brand. And I feel that recently, at least, there's been this kind of meta awareness of clout coming into the fore. So I feel like it's more ubiquitous in the memescape. I feel like there's a lot of like online discourse surrounding it. People just seem to be more aware of its presence. It feels like its own thing. And obviously the pandemic plays a big part in this as well, but I guess we'll return to that later. So maybe before we get started, Anna, what is some of the cloutiest behavior you've ever experienced?
For me, it's the most easiest to like pin it down to some people.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's maybe easier for me.
Okay, go for it.
I feel like for sure, I think the most cloutiest person post-pandemic for sure is like Lotta Volkova, probably.
Okay.
Like the famous stylist. And I'm like, she's for me the most cloutiest person I can imagine right now, like on the internet.
Mm-hmm. And why would you say that is?
It's like, because I mean, she's just like, I mean, she's like this uber stylist that like can like just pull any aesthetic and knows how to sort of like take the most like a niche account with the most popular and then sort of like merge it together and create these like ultimate amazing images that are like perfectly stylized in whatever medium they are. And I'm like, they're always so like grabbing. So yeah, I feel like she's like the best art director in the world.
Okay. Is there anyone else that comes to mind?
Yeah. I mean, like, I feel she's sort of like someone that I feel like it's quite long-term.
Mm.
But on the other hand, I mean, like cloud of the moment is definitely Meg Superstar Princess.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah. So for anyone who doesn't know, Meg is based in New York. She's kind of one of the main faces of the indie sleaze movement, kind of pulls from like old like Tumblr aesthetics and stuff. And like very crazy indie online personality.
Exactly. And I feel like she's someone that is, someone that is just very recent, sort of like very clouty.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of like, what is very important is sort of like, I think cloud also is not always there. So I think like, that's why I think someone like Lotta is like so brilliant, because like, I think she kind of established some sort of like longevity. But I feel like with Meg Superstar Princess, we're still yet to see how long the cloud will last. And
yeah.
I feel like that's so interesting.
Yeah, but she very much captures like that zeitgeist at the moment, I find.
And like her being sort of like the first to revamp blogging and all of these things and being like such cloudy behavior in that regard, like literally true icon. How about you? What do you think is the most cloudiest thing?
Oh, I don't know. I find it hard because I can't think of a particular person, for instance. I can definitely think of like instances and experiences I've lived where you're just like, wow, I've really like entered the clout matrix right now.
Oh my god,
and you're just like, I took the clout pill and now everything is clouted. Okay, so back in January, I went to New York, and Matthew from Neoliberal Hell, which is a New York-based podcast, he was in charge of the list for one of Anna Delvey's house arrest parties.
Oh my god, genius.
So Anna Delvey being the kind of prolific scammer.
Of course.
And while she's under house arrest, she's having these house parties, which weirdly, I think she's now spinning into a series of dinner parties, and she's got like a TV deal now. So like, as you can imagine, it's going to be like clouted to fuck.
Of course.
But no, I remember just like going there. I wasn't allowed to bring any friends. And I think my plane had landed 2 hours before. I kind of rock up at this building and I'm like looking around. I don't really recognize anyone. And after a while, it's kind of like awkwardly like mingling in this crowd. Like, I don't know anyone. This is really awkward.
Really?
But whatever. Start speaking to this girl.
Yeah.
And she told me, and I was like, oh, what do you do? And she was like, oh, I'm a writer. I was like, amazing. Me too. She told me that she had a six-figure book deal. Wow. And so obviously you're going to be like, oh, amazing, congratulations, what's the name of your book, write it down. And she kind of looked at me really blankly and she was like, oh no, I don't have a six-figure book deal, I'm manifesting a six-figure book deal.
Oh my god, brilliant.
So for me, I'm like, okay, that is, I feel very clouted but also very New York kind of tied so as well. Which I guess also something we'll return to later as well. I feel clout is very intrinsically tied to the New York fabric in that sense.
I feel like New York is a breeding ground for clout.
Yeah, like ground zero.
It's ground zero, literally.
No, completely. But yeah, what I find interesting actually is, so if we're kind of to backpedal a bit, I kind of looked up the etymology of the word clout when preparing for this podcast. Weirdly, it originates from Old English. Originally, it meant a lump of something or a patch of cloth used to mend a hole. Cool. Yeah. And then later, it was actually in the 14th century, the meaning shifted to mean some kind of punch or blow or beating, which I found really interesting. It's an idea I'd like to return to a bit later. But the modern notion of clout, as we recognize it today, actually has roots in 1940s Chicago, where it was kind of used to describe the idea of having political pull. It was kind of all over newspapers, all over the news. And obviously this kind of like trickled down into popular culture, especially the Chicago rap scene at the time. So you had people like Nas and Tupac basically using the word clout in their lyrics. And then I guess now we have like the modern conception of what it is across the internet age, which is so tied to the idea of virality. And for me, like connecting the dots between like rap, which is a very financially lucrative genre, is so like innately clouted in a sense. So for me, it's no surprise that because of the popularity of rap, we're seeing the word clout really like enter kind of this like online language.
100%. Also, I feel like, do you think it's like clout spaces are always like quite lucrative spaces?
I think it goes hand in hand. Like, what do you think?
Yeah, I think so too, actually. I was wondering if they're inherently connected, but then now I do think like actually that's true. I feel like it's totally the space where commerce meets commerce and cool.
Yeah, literally. And I feel weirdly, because this kind of almost links back to episode one as well. I feel like there's a connection to mid in some sense.
When
something becomes like financially viable, and I guess clout is so kind of attached to the idea of personal brand as well.
So true. I feel like there's like very much sort of also like this like Andy Warhol New York vibe.
Yes,
where
completely.
I feel like he also did some research on this.
No, completely. Yeah, no, I think with Andy Warhol, like, I know, I feel like you know a lot about this as well, but yeah, I feel like Andy Warhol, going back to what we were saying about New York, really set the DNA for this idea of like his superstars and creating your own personality, and like Club 54. I feel like it's definitely something that's romanticized throughout culture, kind of making your mark via an image.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like he's like literally the OG sort of like, I mean, maybe not OG, because I do think that like clout has been existed since human sort of time. I guess it's such a trendy and it's cool and it's symbolic capital. And I think that already always has existed. But I think he definitely was the one that sort of like capitalized it and was understood that like, I feel like you can like leverage this to a point where I feel like it becomes almost part of the image, the clout, like the usage of the people, like sort of like the casting, quote unquote, what I feel like sort of like generic sort of terms that we do today. But then also I think it's always so cliche to return to Andy Warhol.
Yeah, true.
But then he always is the one. Like I feel like
it's mid, but it's not. Literally. I mean, it's also true. It's facts.
Yeah,
like,
and it's so weird to sort of like understand this. But I feel like it's so like the positioning of sort of like him being really sort of quite like good with media and images and sort of like understanding. So he was, I guess, like the first one to understand circulation of imagery as part of his practice. And yeah, I feel like also Isabel Grass, she's like sort of like a very brilliant sort of like German art critic and writer. And she wrote in her book High Prize that it used to be very sort of like with the rise of Andy Warhol, was very emancipatory, like to have the nexus between life and work to be blurred, and sort of because it's getting away from like the artist as a craftsman, sort of like the artist as conceptual thinker, and sort of being very much sort of like involved in sort of like the producing of symbolic value, and sort of like saying that it's the thought that counts. It's sort of not anymore sort of like the skill set. Maybe it's sort of like the craftsmanship behind an idea. And sort of like she really sort of like maps it out in her book. And she said basically that like it used to be sort of like quite like unique to art. But I think in contemporary culture, anything is symbolically charged. I feel like a t-shirt of like a white blank t-shirt exists en masse, but like from a certain brand it's very cool and from the other one it's not. And when this happened and this sort of charging of like meaning and clout into objects is sort of just like the dominant sort of like root of like how sort of like markets works and sort of like how our economy is like centered around. No, it's like a lived experience.
Completely. It's I find it interesting because I feel like when people speak about clout, it's usually kind of attached to a person, but I think it's really important to think about it in terms of objects as well. I don't even know if clout is a good or a bad thing. For me, it's just like a kind of, it's a given. It just exists in our social fabric at the moment. But I feel like in a way I find it interesting. Like obviously it has negative connotations as well to be like someone's a clout chaser, someone's chasing clout. And I guess one thing I would love to ask you, I love the term like all clout, no substance. Yes, and I'm like, what does that mean to you?
All clout, no substance. I feel like this is someone that I guess is between scamming and socialite merging together. So I feel like there's sort of like a new positioning and someone that I feel like really understands sort of social media, I guess. And it's really sort of like understands how to capture a moment without actually contributing to something. So I feel like they're never an author or sort of like, part of like the creational process, but sort of, or the discourse. It's just sort of like understands how to mediate the discourse in the most sort of like clever way. And I do think that is quite sort of like, it is a skill for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's definitely sort of on my side also. I mean, I'm not sure in terms of like what is clout and like, do I think it's positive or negative? Same, I'm so neutral to it. So I'm also kind of like quite agnostic in general. Like I can understand it. And I also can understand through a lens where I'm like, I find it super interesting to look at like Anna Delvey. I'm like, do I want to be friends with her? I'm not sure. But like, I do think I find that super interesting, like as a sort of like a case study that to be studied. So the same, I feel like I would love to like, document or sort of like follow them like a little fly into the room, someone that is like all cloud, no substance.
It's so true, because I feel like, I mean, you mentioned Anna Delvey. I think one thing I've been thinking about a lot recently, I guess, I feel like all of this kind of discourse surrounding clout is really happening concurrently to, like, I guess the current era we're in, which a lot of people have said is a scammer era. I think it started off in 2019 was when it kind of reached like mainstream circulation, I guess. That was Anna Delvey got arrested, that cut article with Caroline Calloway came about. And when I'm kind of thinking about it, I'm just like, okay, I guess if clout is this this social cachet, this kind of like expert personal branding or something, how different is it really to being a scammer if you're just kind of inventing your own reality? I guess inventing Anna, for instance.
Exactly. I mean, I do think that what is important, sort of like, because I think scamming has such like a bad connotation, which I do think, like, I mean, the moment you cause others harms, I mean, it's, I mean, I think value judgment to be made.
Yeah, that's very true.
Exactly. So I feel like the moment you harm others, I think it's like, I guess, like sort of something that is moral in its sort of cause. However, I do think sort of why is scamming such a contemporary thing? I mean, like if we look sort of like at cost of living crisis, all of this, and sort of like the precarity of sort of like the people in general, I think especially sort of like in the West, I feel like isolating them now, sort of like, but I think the precarity of sort of maybe the Zillennial like era is sort of like quite intense, and I feel like that is sort of like an outcome, and the material conditions everyone has to like deal with is sort of like makes clout chasing or sort of scamming something that is almost necessary, because like not everyone has the benefit of like a beautiful house and a beautiful family that has like sort of relationship to someone that can help them, but like some people really need to create it out of nothing. So I am quite intrigued how this sort of like translation from image to reality is sort of like how that happens and like what is sort of like the conditions for it. And again, I think New York
Yeah, it all leads back to all roads lead to New York. Honestly,
it's the most extreme place. Like, to sustain yourself in New York really takes a lot of sort of like effort, energy.
Yeah,
I mean, you have no health insurance, like by default, like all of these things. So I feel like, of course, like this will like make people do crazy shit.
No, it's so true. Yeah, definitely like ground zero, the best case study for that kind of stuff. I even find like hosting culture, for instance, for club nights.
Yes.
I feel like that is such a like child of like New York culture and like everything you've just said. But the fact that like, I know I've like seen like hosting culture migrate to London recently, which I find a bit, like, to be honest, I find a bit strange because I'm like, this is so native to like the economic conditions that birthed New York. But I guess that leads us quite neatly into, because I guess the idea of hosting culture is that you you bring a group of people who bring their own kind of certain pools of circulation to a night. And I guess one of the reasons, like, I've felt like clout in the discourse, especially in 2023, is I feel like earlier on in the year there was like a quick succession of a lot of kind of clouted, marketized examples. I guess the most like obvious being the Marc Jacobs Heaven sofa campaign. For those who don't know, Marc Jacobs released this campaign earlier in the year where it basically depicted this long, like, eternal sofa, like an infinity sofa of all these famous people. But I think what's crucial is the people who were selected to be on the couch were a mix of kind of micro nano influencers from like Times Square in New York, like juxtaposed with like Isabella Burley from like Climax Books, and then the guy from The Sopranos. Literally. And it was just this like pick and mix of people in this localized space. And like a month after that, or like sometime in that time bubble, there was also the NY Mag cover, which depicted a bunch of kind of New York like hot faces, I guess, on this intersection. Like, again, at a similar time, New York artist Amelia Ullman released a series of portraits depicting like all these kind of these famous like Times Square faces. And so all of these things kind of happened all at once, which I guess then prompted this online discourse. I guess originally it was started again by another New York artist, Brad Trammell, a great post-internet artist, who actually coined a term to describe this phenomena called clout bombing. So actually, I have the definition with me right now. So, I'm very well prepared. But basically, yeah, Brad's refers, like, defines clout bombing as the act of putting as many people of clout as possible in a single photo op. This is meant to set off a massive cluster of reposts that makes the clout bomb unavoidable on everyone's feed. While no single micro celebrity could create this level of attention, their combined effort is able to overlap with enough follower counts to achieve temporary ubiquity before another clout bomb takes its place. Wow. This post was the post that launched 1,000 memes anyway. I almost feel like the post itself was a clout bomb.
Yeah, I agree.
But I feel like one important thing, it really, I mean, for all the discourse surrounding this, and I won't touch on clout bombing for too long because I feel like the topic is rich enough, but I think one thing that was really important that it highlighted for me was, I guess, within this kind of the climate of the internet, the algorithm is what kind of guides our interests. Like, we all have our kind of our algorithmic kind of personal playlists of kind of clout pools surrounding us. And actually, so the term clout bombing, which Brad is referring to, is a play on an earlier term called clout pooling, which was basically this thing where a group of posters kind of have this mutual agreement and they share their platform and they cross their audiences. But I guess what we're seeing now, and I guess what the term clout bombing refers to, is that big brands are coming in, they're inserting themselves into these kind of hip cultural scenes with like big money campaigns, and the whole thing could feel like a forced meme. But I guess, yeah, I like, you have so much experience in fashion and like these like realms, it'd be interesting to hear your take on it.
No, for sure. I do think like that is sort of crucial. And I think this is what everyone expects a creative director, I guess, to do these days. And I think that's the overflown thing of why everyone is a creative director.
Yeah.
And I think it's because you in the end need to curate sort of things. I think in today's sort of like context, I think it's all about sort of curation and sort of the idea of like remixing cultures and being able to like pull from all of these different things at the same time and talking to so many peoples. Like in a sort of like hidden sort of niche way, so you feel cool or relevant. But I do think that's super sort of like hard. I feel like it's almost like impossible. And I feel like even like most forced means be so strange. And I feel like when these sort of like, because sort of like, I don't know, corporations come in, I feel like it always feels like kind of a bit lame. But it's literally mid, because it's impossible. By the time it gets approved by sort of like a chief marketing executive, it's like already gone for like cloud, like for real sort of like cloud forming. I feel like you really need to sort of like have the right moment at the right time, unless you sort of like really are have this like super fast turnover. But on the other hand, I think what is sort of like very important is sort of, I think that these sort of like corporations act sort of like tech companies who try to make as many sort of connections as possible. Sort of like that you connect to your friends. And I feel like they're very much like this Google City approach of like trying to make the streets as compatible, so everyone has like meet each other as much as possible. So you have like brilliant ideas you can share. And I guess it's sort of like facilitating the infrastructure where you could make this happen without actually knowing what will happen. So I think it's understanding sort of this boundary of like making it sort of an infrastructure where something could happen, but you don't even know what's going to happen. And I think these are like, if a brand ever touches on these cloud moments, I think it's exactly then. And I think I would say that I think these are sort of like the moments where I think with the Heaven one, I feel like it's like genius that Dean Kasich calls himself now writer/model.
Yeah,
and I feel like it's so like these sort of like things are what then makes it. I think maybe it's not even the image itself. It's like the context is being taken on, the people that are responding to it, and sort of like actually sort of like entering the pool of sort of like it being appropriated.
Yeah. So kind of going back to like the Google part. Yeah. So like using, is what you're trying to say by like putting a bunch of kind of different clouted people on a couch, like each person is their own kind of avenue, like their own road.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the city of creative people that are all on the Heaven Marc Jacobs side. But I feel like no, like all of them are sort of like possible avenues, and you never know which one will take off. And like but you need to understand that you need to allow this space to happen. And I think that's people that understand sort of like things, and like again coming back to Lotta, sort of like Slavoj Žižek, they understand how to connect and curate these things.
That's so true.
That it always feels relevant.
Yeah.
And that they understand that, like, I think they might not be fully in charge, but like they sort of like understand which person to ask and put them in the right space, either in sort of a digital space in Discord or sort of like in a real sofa. And yeah, I think in that sense, sofa was sort of like the infrastructure, I guess.
Yeah. And this is the thing, because I know there was like a lot of like hate surrounding like the post clout bomb discourse and stuff. Like, honestly, I personally, like, I don't actually think it's that deep.
Yes,
like,
same.
It's like, it's really not that deep. People love to complain. Yeah, like,
of course.
But one, I do think, like, kind of going off what you're saying as well, like, it really does speak to the fact that, like, okay, there was like a lot of things being like, oh, like people are craving like a local, like an actual physical space. For me, I don't even think it was as much about that as I think it's a very good representation of the way that the internet is at the moment, in that you can have someone who's like a macro celebrity, like the dude from The Sopranos, next to these very like niche, localized kind of like nano celebrities who are just like thinkfluencers who run like a random newsletter in New York. And it really speaks to kind of like the flattening of culture and the way that the internet has kind of democratized everything. And also, interestingly, by putting all these people in one place, again, I think it is very emblematic of the internet, because some people that I find clouted are very different to what the next person will find clouted.
Because
we have these very algorithmic kind of personal, like, like clout playlists.
Agreed. And I feel like also it's like, again, like it's always about sort of like the curation and the mix, because in the end, I feel like we all know that certain garment can be cool on someone and not cool on the other person. Mm. And I think that's the same about sort of like having sort of hosting an event. I feel like the moment you mix them all together, it becomes iconic or like brilliant or stuff. Like you really engage with it in sort of a way because it feels sort of like fresh and new. And I feel like it's all about collaging these days. It's not like reinventing the full wheel, but like sort of like collaging and making new things happen and making like being able to sort of like connect something that is fresh. And I think that's why I think it's like brilliant. And so it also takes sort of someone, I think like Andreas Reckwitz, who's also again a German sociologist, who says that it's all about sort of cultural remixes.
Yeah, completely. No, that makes me think of, I guess like it's also a symptom of globalization, but that is also totally. The internet itself
exactly.
as well.
Exactly, it's the internet. And I think this also the flattening of sort of like information, I feel like, Jack Self called it the big flat now. And I feel like that's very much sort of like definitely still accurate. And I feel like we really sort of like are sort of like, and of course this is so problematic as well and has all these like downsides, but also I feel like if it's sort of like treated well and handled with care, I think it can be really interesting. And then I do think that like so these formulas of like cloud chasing is exactly that, trying to like make it mid, but like still like it's interesting. I still do think that's the most interesting part about it. And I feel like it's almost like we are like these Frankensteins of everything. It's like no longer, like there's no sort of like, everyone just like does everything all at the same time. You know, like all of a sudden you're like this hot basic girl and then you're sort of like edgy punk. And then I feel like we are so sort of like fine with this. I mean, it's no longer a problem. I think authenticity is off the radar.
Yeah.
And I feel like we are really sort of like, and I feel like I'm kind of like pro that. I'm like, let's accelerate. Let's make it even more intense. Like, let's like push the limits of like what a human sort of like should present itself or like put themselves out there.
So yeah, it's funny that you use the word accelerationist as well, because kind of going, I guess, back to the clout bombing thing. So I guess all these things were happening earlier on in the year. And what I found really funny, just to actually return to Matthew from Neoliberal Hell, the podcast again. So I think it was like a month or two ago. I think we were like both affiliated with whatever happened. I don't know. I just woke up one day and he created this thing called clout accelerationism. And it was basically just taking the piss out of online clout culture. He created this online list of internet names, which he posted on his stories, kind of with the tagline, link and build and they will come. And the idea was there was a first iteration of the list. And then the next day he posted a second iteration. Each time more and more names were kind of posted and it just got more and more absurd. And then he opened up to the floor for like a potential third version of the list. And he was like, anyone who messages me will be on the list. So I know there was like some people doing it very sincerely. Like other people were basically just being like, oh, put my mom on, like put on the CIA. Like it just got like so insane. And then he ended up like the internet, literally. But then the funny thing was then he was like, oh, lol, like there's not a third list. This was just like a performance. And so like take it as you will. But I think if anything, what it highlighted for me at least was like the absurdity of all of this. Like it's very much like a performance. It's
for sure. It's so profound. Like I mean, in general, I feel like, and that's why I think it's so linked to art. And because I think the art was the first sort of industry that like understood that you could create value beyond its material thing or its craft, but because of the persona, because of what their ideology was or who they represented as a person, let's say sort of like, I mean, very early on, of course, like this number one thing Duchamp is like he puts one thing, it doesn't mean anything there, and then he puts it in the gallery space, all of a sudden it means something. And that's sort of like understanding clout, right? It's like understanding that like things are malleable and sort of like you can put them into a context where then they can be sort of like exploited, or not even exploited, but they can then be sort of like
played on
and I think that's almost the same. It's like instead of like putting a piece of work into a gallery, someone said, I take your name onto my list because that list is sort of like valuable. And then of the acceleration, like everyone looking at it, it becomes a space, right? It's like a sort of digital sort of like a gallery space. Yeah, exactly. Where I feel like you all of a sudden sort of like the creation within it is important. And that I think it's just like so iconic. Like it's so the internet. And this is why I feel like I'm addicted to like the digital sphere, is because I think this is, I think, to me, the most interesting part is like, and coming back sort of that, I do believe that it's sort of like the norms of art. And that's why I think everyone nowadays, like, I feel like feels everything is a performance, and I feel everything is not real. And yeah. So if everything is sort of an act, and I feel like it's sort of like almost like intrinsic to everyone. I feel like the discourse of like being sort of authentic or sort of like in a certain way, like sincere, is kind of like irrelevant, I feel, almost.
Yeah, that binary has collapsed in on itself. Totally, like, it just doesn't make sense in this particular, like, climate anymore. Like, I don't know, yeah, like, I feel like, yeah, everything we're saying is just so, like, bound to social media. Like, even in the last 10 years, it's changed so much. But, yeah, I guess, I know, like, even Hannah Diamond, for instance, is a good example. Like, she, Hannah Diamond being the PC music artist, amazing, prolific pop star. But she was, I guess, she started online right at the beginning of Instagram in 2013. And back then, it wasn't kind of a normal thing to post this personality online. Yeah. It was, like, very unheard of almost. Yeah. But then she was saying, I guess, over the last 10 years, now it's just, like, taken for granted. Yeah. And it's really like a way, like a symptom of the ways in which like capitalism has co-opted the internet and like our identities as well. We're all content creators, especially with user-generated content. Yeah, I mean, with user-generated content, we're like all content creators, we're all influencers, we're all driven and directed by market powers and like the networks of people and places that we post and share. Like, they're all quantified.
So
the cloud demon like attaches to all of it, basically.
Oh my god, such a genius name, the cloud demon. And I feel on this note, I feel like Mackenzie Wark did such a brilliant sort of like analysis of this, that I feel like sort of like, I mean, there's sort of like a new sort of like layer of capitalism that I think these days are, I think, the, I guess, the metropolitan sort of like culture class has to reinvent information constantly. So we need to recycle information, come up with new USPs on how to present the same information.
True.
And I think this is cloud bombing and cloud chasing is sort of like a symptom of trying to make that happen, right?
Yeah.
It's like trying to make sure that there is a USP, there is a space for something. And we're constantly sort of like asked to sort of like repackage the same old information, but in a new way, with a new twist, sort of with a new sort of clickbaity thing. And sort of, I think that's kind of like interesting that this sort of like a key sort of part of our lives these days is sort of to understand how to create content at all times, and understanding that the cloud demon is there. And
like, the cloud demon is inside all of us.
Inside all of us. And it's like, it's expected. It's like, it's part of a successful person, right? Mm-hmm. They understand how to challenge and sort of like put out the cloud demon on display and say cloud demon dance.
Literally. Yeah, it's like, yeah, I find it, because I'm like, okay, yeah, clout can obviously be quantified through social media metrics, but for me almost I kind of see it as like this invisible force as well, which
Totally. And I feel like it's a skill. I mean, like,
completely.
That just, I think this wasn't to me free. You can't sort of like, I guess, succeed anymore unless you already are on the top without challenging and sort of like using the cloud demons and make them dance. So I feel like this is sort of like, I guess, the key sort of thing is that this is part of the package of like how to understand the world.
Yeah, no, completely. And so it's just like, for all we do with like criticizing like clout bombing and whatnot, or like whatever online discourse is happening, for me, I'm just like, well, I almost feel like low-key, like, do any of us really want to do this? Probably not. But, like, it's just such a symptom of now. Yeah. It's unfortunately, like, a given at this point that, yes, the demon we have to ride on our backs.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. And I feel like it's almost like, and that's why I think sometimes I find it quite, like, the critique felt quite flat, because then people are like, I know good people are successful because of, like, not having to do this. But, I mean, if you look at their, like, material sort of background, it might not be sort of, like, as straightforward. I feel like some people are asked to have to perform more for the network in order to get access. And I think for others, it's like sort of like through sort of, I guess, like network, like being embedded in, being in the right country, being in the right moment already, sort of like through sort of like the proximity of real life can gain access. But also I think that's a massive privilege. And I feel like we need to be aware that I think not like, I mean, the idea that you have to perform for the network is sort of like, I guess, sad, but also, I mean, like, it's still like an opportunity out there. You can use it in an interesting way.
No, completely. In a way, I feel like it's something we both have experiences with as well. And I don't know, I feel like you have a very recognizable, distinct online personality, and I'd be interested to, I'd be interested to know. And like, obviously it's kind of trickled down into like the material world as well. But what have your experiences been of all of this?
Yeah, I mean, like, to me, I guess this is sort of like the key sort of moment of like what I realized is sort of interesting. And I think that's sort of like what I research and develop in my art the most is sort of like how images create realities, right? Mm. And I think I really early on have like a very sort of like typical millennial prototype life. It's like I grew up sort of like remote, had access to the internet, was born transgender, which also I think is sort of like something more accepted now. And then got casted, quote unquote, on the internet for Mark by Marc Jacobs and got flown to New York. And like all of these things were literally through the internet and this just through the image, I was able to get access to sort of certain spaces. And I was like, this is so like sort of was so crucial coming up. And also again, like wearing a skirt was an immediate signifier that like you were a girl or sort of like you were sort of like posh or whatever. And all of these things I could very early on play with because they were not what I was given. And basically, yeah. And that's how I learned of my, I think, initial interest in images and how to create realities from them. And then I think later on, I feel like now, I mean, I'm like, it's very much a job. I'm like whatever I post on social media is quite like calculated, I guess. And I feel like this is something like quite.
We're going inside the matrix now.
I'm like red pilled. I'm like, or is this even the right? I'm like, maybe I'm blue pilled. I'm like,
a third more sinister thing.
Literally. And I'm like, okay, I'm actually fine. Like, it's like, I understand it. It's a part of a job. And I do this for so many sort of like brand corporations. I'm like, that it's a full time job to just do it. And I'm like, approach at the same time. I'm like, I'm not wasting time on like, I know so many people are stuff like, oh my god, I'm scrolling 4 hours on Instagram. I'm actually kind of like, I'm quite like strategic. I'm like, I think like I'm gonna take this content now, we'll post it later, I will make sure that it makes sense, and if it's sort of like sort of highlight this sort of storytelling about it. And this is why I think also is the key difference. It's like, I'm not worried that it's fake, but it needs to be a good story. Like, I mean, it's a sort of like same with creative writing. I mean, like, I'm not so interested in like, sort of like, is this sort of now a real image or sort of did this happen at that time? But like, how good did you tell the story? And sort of what is sort of your skill in narrating the story? And I think this is sort of a lot what I do in my art, but also on social media is sort of like narrating the story that I think I want to communicate. And then it becomes to me, it's almost like creative writing. It's like, it's a sketchbook to me. Social media is a sketchbook of like getting things out there, having them tested. And then I feel like later on I can reflect on them maybe in sort of like an artwork or sort of like a text that I've written or sort of like something like more sort of like, I guess, like sustainable in terms of like time. But like, yeah, I feel like it's very much a sketchbook that I think I just put out there and like try and like like get better at the skill of like telling stories.
No, that's, I mean, I completely agree with that as well. I feel like sometimes I just see myself as a weird little like urchin, like on social media, like a little scavenger, and I'm just kind of like scavenging for little things. And I don't know. I feel like maybe my content is unhinged sometimes. I have no idea how it comes across to people. But no, I get the complete same thing. For me, it's definitely like so intrinsically. For me, it was a LARP. It was world building. Again, the background I come from is very like culturally devoid of anything. But I think the freedom that and obviously like disclaimer, it would be great if, you know, Web 2 tech overlords weren't benefiting from our free labor. But in the kind of realms of creativity and kind of giving us a platform, at least, I think the fact that we can LARP these realities and kind of create social circles and like digital selves, like it's quite liberating at the same time. And I guess that's detached from Web 2, but I guess also and Web also, 2 is a symptom.
And I feel like it's, there's also some, like, I think a lot of people find it quite shameful to talk about this, or find it's like, oh my God, how dare you to say that you actually do this for sort of like, commercial purposes. And I'm like, this is literally what we all do every day. I'm like, I don't enjoy sitting in front of a desk 8 hours a day. I'm like, I'm actually would love to just chill in my bed. But I mean, I do need to pay sort of like all of the things. And like,
unfortunately, we live in a society.
Yeah, we live in a society, literally. And I'm like, oof. So,
but when the orca revolution comes, I'm on the side of the orcas. Yes, we will be overthrowing all of this as a big disclaimer. Yes, but until then...
Until then, we live in a society.
Yeah, exactly. We live in a society.
And I think this is sort of like the key sort of like, I guess, outcome that I feel like, yeah, it's like, oh my God, it's sort of like something that you have, like, kind of just have to deal with. The only thing that I think is important is that you realize it is a LARP. So I think this is, I think, where also I think some people can might get confused. I mean, like in live action role play, which is LARPing, there's this thing where you bleed sort of as a character. So it's when sort of like the fictional narrative infiltrates your real life and you can't distinguish it. So it's called a bleed. And I think you need to be aware of it. So I think that's a badly LARP design is sort of when you are not aware of the limitations. And that's, I think, the typical like Marilyn Monroe vibe. It's like, I think also like anyone sort of like a celebrity, I think they're all LARPing anyways.
But
I think like when once they get lost and they don't understand who they are, I mean, the idol... I'm just like putting out there, is giving this vibe. Like, I mean, very much like people being lost in LARPing is when they don't understand the difference. And this is also, I think, where I think it's important to connect it to reality. I mean, there needs to be moments where I think you're very aware that I feel like you do this with this sort of like, maybe not in the moment, but like you can reflect maybe half a year later that I think that was sort of like that. You know? It's actually understanding it and like also being aware that I feel like these are the metrics people like judge you by. And I find it quite interesting that I feel like it's quite like you need to be aware that like I think it's quite intrinsic to everyone, and I feel like someone who says they don't care, they're lying to themselves.
Completely. I guess one thing also that I want to touch on, I guess this kind of idea of like looking into the dark side of clout, because I feel like this is definitely, I mean, I guess scammer culture is a part of this, but one recent example that springs into my mind is the guy, I think he was in his early 20s, who leaked the Pentagon documents. And so he was, I mean, I don't know why he was given access to these documents to begin with, but it all transpired basically that he was in a Discord for, I think, Christians who like guns or something. It was like really fucking random. I can't remember the name of the Discord server. But it transpired that the reason he had leaked or shared these documents to begin with was that he was lonely and he just wanted to impress his friends. And I know. And so I think it, like, while it's like crazy what happened and also very absurd, and it highlights the absurdity of clout and whatnot, I think an important thing to touch on is kind of clout is like the symptom of like Gen Z loneliness. Especially during the pandemic when everyone was so online, and suddenly, and I guess this relates to what we were just saying as well, like the distinction between our LARP and the reality got so blurred that like you can just share what feels like a very like meaningless document to share with your friends without like, basically he needed to check himself and he didn't check himself.
He didn't check himself. And also, I mean, he did, I guess, like did some type of service to someone, but I think he like, I mean, didn't, I guess it's like, just like, he didn't do it ideological, which is, I guess...
Like it wasn't an act of protest.
He did it, it's not an act of protest. He did it ideologically to impress other people, which I do think that a lot of, like, quote-unquote heroes do this for sure, like, just intrinsically, that I feel like we, like, kind of, like, try always to impress, I guess, people that we admire or, like, find cool. But, I mean, there's a line between sort of like not being able to come out of your bubble and not being able to communicate to people outside of sort of like a space that you feel like maybe is sort of like lonely. Sort of, I mean, like talking about loneliness is so important. And I feel like, I guess it's so sad that like he couldn't do that. Like, I feel like in order to like not feel lonely, he had to prove himself to this group.
Yeah.
And then read these papers. Like, oh my God, I'm like, oof.
Yeah, no, this is the thing. It's very like, oh, because I feel it's one of those things that like all of us can relate to in one extent or another. Like everyone's done something to impress a crush or as you said, someone they admire. Like everyone sent a meme, which is like kind of catered to someone's like tastes or whatever. But I guess then there's a fine line between that and leaking Pentagon documents.
Yes, and like classified documents should not be shared if you do it for others.
Yeah, just don't do things for clout. Do it because you want to do it.
Exactly. Do it for like out of protest, but not out of sort of like trying to impress people. But then also, I guess like this is also again like a very human trait, trying to impress people.
Yeah.
And I do think that also a lot of protest comes out of this idea of like trying to impress people, which I also don't find as a negative thing.
It's just kind of what it is.
We live in a society.
But I guess another thing that I personally like found really interesting, and I guess it goes back to these idea of digital networks.
Yeah.
And I think it relates to what we're saying about the guy who leaked the unclassified documents.
Yes.
But for me, I'm like, we could, sometimes I can also see clout as almost a violent act in itself. And this might be a bit controversial, but I almost feel like clout is something that is weaponized. Like it has ammunition, and that ammunition is clout, it's social cachet. But for me, and if anyone wants to kind of research further into this, Adam Curtis has a great documentary called All Watched Over by Machines of Loving Grace, where he speaks about this in a bit more detail. But I guess like what the internet is built on is like these digital networks, these scenes without territories, basically what some people would refer to as cybernetics, the idea that we're all kind of nodes in this interrelated, interconnected system. Like interestingly, conveniently, all of this kind of stuff, like the idea of cybernetics itself, actually has roots in the 1940s military industrial complex.
Of course, it does.
It always goes back to the military. So for me, I'm like, it's almost not surprising that we're seeing this kind of, especially when combined with post-capitalism, this very like dark side of clout emerge. I guess that kind of brings me to my final question. Might be a nice place to round off, but I'm interested to know how do you see clout evolving in an era of kind of increasing unrealities?
I think clout will just like get more and more relevant because in the end, clout is social cachet, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in a world where everything is overflown, like someone needs to make that decision that this generated face is the one that everyone wants, or this sort of like, like abstract sort of like positioning. And I feel exactly in these sort of like spaces where everything's overflown, clout sort of almost like it's like immediate sort of like positioning because it makes that image more relevant than all the others. I'm like, also, I'm so not scared. I'm like, I'm ready to take it. I'm so adventurous. I would I'm dying to like see into the future. I would love to live in like 400 years from now on. Like stuff like just to quickly come back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Just have a quick trip.
Yeah, just a quick trip. But I must say, I don't know, it's like kind of weird. So I do think that like it's going to be super interesting, and like I can't wait to see what's going to come up. But like for sure, one will be more valuable than the others. I mean, we saw how that value will always be sort of like quantified in some way or the other.
Yeah.
And so I think the person of like, putting it, making it cool is definitely even more in demand now.
Yeah, so watch this space.
Yeah, watch this space.
TBC.
TBC curators are coming. No, but I think also that's when everyone becomes sort of like very much sort of like this tastemakers. And I think like maybe craftsmanships will go out of style, but like someone sort of like saying now this is relevant.
Mm.
We all now look at this one because we're so overflown. That will always, like, that will just, like, get bigger and bigger. Quote-unquote influencer.
I feel like, God, it sounds sci-fi. It's really not, though. This is what's crazy to me. But no, that's so true. I feel like that's a great place to round off. Anna, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. Also, thank you for listening.
Oh my God, no, yeah. Thank you so much for listening. This is Logged On. Don't forget to like and subscribe. We're available wherever you listen to podcasts, and stay tuned for the next episode.
Logged On.